Hey everybody, my name is Joe Flesh. Joining me as always is Ryan. We are the Hobby Heroes. How you doing, Ryan?
Doing well. How are you, Joe?
Not too bad. Finally got together to record episode 4, only like literally an entire month later, if not longer. We tend to cut these pretty close to the release dates. But we are here. So let's kick off with what we've been doing in the hobby. How have you been? What you been up to?
Slow and steady. Working on some bases for my Dwarf Kings of War army. What I've been doing is I'm doing the what do you call them, the regimental bases, I guess. And so I'm going with more of like a mountain theme, kind of rocky. And so I got some rocks from Woodland Scenics, and I've just been casting a bunch of those and trying to put them on there in a way that looks decent. But it's, you know, when you think of a 5x4 unit, basically 20 models, it looks a lot bigger in your mind than it is on the actual table. Those bases really aren't very big, and so it's taken a lot of work to find something that looks good, but I'm part way there. I got most of the designs done. I just gotta get them together now, and other than that, been cleaning up some models. Been a slow week at work there before Thanksgiving, so I was able to get those done. Haven't got all of them done, but quite a few. I got all the war machines cleaned, the Brock Riders cleaned. And so started painting on an organ gun, got base coats and some washes on it, but I still got a ways to go on that. What are you been up to, Joe?
Not a lot. Why don't you speak to the quality of those dwarf mods? Didn't you have some complaints about the gaps?
Yeah, they're pretty gappy, really. It's the way that the bodies come in two pieces. There's kind of like the top torso and then the bottom legs, but the legs come with like the back, and then the top torso comes with the front and the stomach, and they're hooked together by a peg. But the peg just really doesn't fit, and by the time you force it to fit, there is a pretty good size gap in there for the few that I've put together so far. And so really what I had to do was just completely cut out that peg and just kind of glue it together as best I can. And I've gotten it good enough to where I can just use liquid green stuff instead of having to use some actual putty. So it'll work. It just took a little bit more force than I was hoping to for just normal run-of-the-mill guys.
Yeah, I know there was another guy I've seen talking recently on Twitter about the same thing, saying, man, the dwarfs have a lot more gap in them than I'd prefer.
Yeah, the Brock Riders weren't as bad as I thought they were going to be because they're that ResTech stuff.
Right.
And they had a little bit of gaps, but I did the whole put them in boiling water thing, and that worked out really well. I mean, that was way simpler than I thought it was going to be. You know, I just boiled some water in our kettle, poured it into a bowl, and then just kind of did like two Brock Riders at a time and left them in there for, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 seconds, pulled them out, smashed them together, and it bent right into place. And so again, small gaps, but stuff that I can handle with some liquid green stuff. So nothing terrible that other companies don't have the same issues with.
Yeah, the dwarf models from GW go together the same way. The legs are kind of attached to the back and the head's attached to the front of the torso. And I guess, speaking of that, that's the older Warriors. I guess I don't know that the new stuff is like that. I built Iron Drakes. I can't remember how they went together.
Yeah, I don't know. The new stuff that GW made that I put together for like the Lizards and the Ogres, that was top notch. That went together smoother than anything that I've ever put together. But again, they've been doing it for, you know, decades at this point, so it better be, you know.
Yeah, best sculptors, best technology, best, yeah. Best
never
track
be able to
record.
Take that away from them. I ain't paying $165 for a model now, though, so that's for sure.
Well, you know, yep, they figure people will pay whatever they can pay.
Yeah, blood from a stone.
Something. So, hobby-wise, what have I been doing? What did I do last time that we talked? I don't even remember. I think I was cleaning up the
orcs. Getting ready for the Army in a Weekend thing.
Yeah, Army in a Weekend. So, I did. We did the Army in a Weekend, me and a number of other guys from other podcasts, primarily The Countercharge, Mark Zielinski, Rob Fanuf. There was three or four other guys that participated. Someone, a couple guys from up in the Northeast, Ohio. I don't know if anyone from, I think one of the guys from Texas got on there for a while I was sleeping. So, pretty good weekend. I did not, obviously, finish the army. In fact, I think pretty much all I got done was painting 10 boar models. It turns out that it's really hard to force yourself to avoid, I guess, after so many years, you know, you have a method and you have a standard that you like to do, and it's really difficult to force yourself out of that standard. So I tried just doing kind of a slap job, and it turned into not a slappy job. And so, yeah, I got like 10 boards done, and that was pretty much it. Oh, and a unit filler. I finished a unit filler.
Yeah, I'm with you on the whole standard. I mean, because not only is it just a standard of what you've, you know, muscle memory have taught yourself to do, it's what you expect yourself to do. You know you can do better. You don't want to go below your standard. And so it's, I completely get that. And that's why I knew it was going to be hard to do in a weekend. Did any of the guys actually finish all 1,000 points?
Yeah. Mark Zielinski's kid finished his, I think it was high elves he was working on. And I mean, you know, I don't know how old his son is, but you can, even he says, you know, oh, it's okay. You know, he painted it to what he could, but obviously he hasn't been painting for 20 years like the rest of us are. And I doubt he's a savant. So, yeah. But he finished his, Rob Fanuf finished his, albeit it was like 20 models because it was an ogre army. So a little unfair advantage. I know Mark got a lot of dwarfs done. He was doing abyssal dwarfs. He didn't necessarily get them done, but he got them, you know, pretty heavily base coated. So
yeah, I saw the Twitter pictures and about blinded you with the amount of gold he was doing. He kept complaining about having to base coat all the gold. He said I should have just done a spray gold on it.
Yeah, it was a good time though. So I didn't finish it. I did get everything primed and based. I ended up abandoning the whole multi-base regimental basing thing. I cut like five guys' legs off trying to get those plastic discs off the bottom of their feet. So I finally just gave up, said, you know what? There's no way that I'm going to have the patience to do this. So I just ended up individually basing them all on their 25 mils that Mantic gave me.
I did do that with a couple of the dwarves. I was basically just trying to see how hard it was going to be to get those discs off there, since you were saying you're having problems in the dwarfs are fine. I mean, I didn't lose any feet. They came off clean. The only problem that I ran into is one of the bodies has a cloak that goes all the way down to the feet. So about 2/3 of the round disc is attached to the model. So you just got to keep cutting and shaving until you can get everything flat.
Yeah, I don't know what the dwarf feet look like, but the orcs' feet are very thin. Not very, because they're not wearing boots or anything, so it's literally just like their toes and their feet, and it's so easy to cut the toes off, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that before I started working on the bases, I cut a couple of dwarfs just to make sure that I was going to be able to, and I shouldn't have any problems getting those discs off there, just a little bit more elbow grease on a few of them.
Right on. Well, you got the good end then.
Yeah.
So I got them all on their bases, I got them sanded, I got everything primed. Pretty shortly after that, I think maybe a week after that, I did actually finish the whole 9-man unit of Gore Riders. All I have to do is put some grass on the base and clear coat them. Just recently, I finished a chariot. I've currently got 5 of the Great Axe Warriors on the table. They're almost done. I've got everything base coated, shaded, It's layered up right now. It's just waiting for me to do the highlights, and I haven't touched the weapons form yet. I'm just going to do them in packs of five. I find that I tend to get about a half an hour of paint time a night, and then maybe a half hour in the morning, depending on how long I stay on my treadmill. So roughly an hour of paint a day. 5 miles at a time, it just seems like it's that factory line, assembly line painting. But because it's only 5 miles, it doesn't take as long for you to see a result. So it's not quite as depressing as painting like 40 guys at a time. So I figure I'm doing the five. Oh, hey, cool. I'll see those five done. But like, all right, I'll just start on the next five. Instead of constantly working on them going, I'm never going to make it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Because my least favorite part about painting is the base coating. And so when you got a base coat 40 guys, I hate it. So I do about five, you know, just depends on the size of the unit, but I try and break it up into chunks and do it a little bit of time, or else I just wouldn't do it. I'd just push them off and work on something else.
So we did that, and then we were all supposed to play a 1,000 point game, which took me like another week to do. But you, me, our buddy Dave, Chuck came down from Bloomington. We got together on a Sunday and we all played a bunch of games. So I played you at 1,000 points with my orcs versus your dwarves. And I had a unit of chariots, two troops of gore riders, horde of axes, a unit of great warriors, a boss on a boar, and a god speaker with bane chant for a spell. And you handled me pretty well.
Yeah, mine was just a king, 10-man regiment of brock riders, regiment of berserkers, regiment of iron guard, an organ gun, and then a regiment of the Iron Watch rifles, and my shooting was just on. I mean, it's, and at that low points, shooting is going to be really effective if it's good. And I mean, the first turn you gave me a charge from my Brock Riders on, I want to say your chariots or something.
Yeah,
and I just hit and broke them, and then my organ gun, it gets 15 shots. I bet I hit, what, 10 or 11 of them?
Yeah, 15 shots on a 5. You hit 11, and then you wounded like 8.
Right, and then
ludicrous.
And then I think I did maybe 3 or 4 more with the rifles, and so that took off another unit of, I think it was just regular orcs, whatever they're called. And so right off the bat, I mean, I was up, and then it just kind of spiraled out of control from there. I mean, your character guy on the mount did pretty well. I mean, he took out the unit of the, you know, the rifle shooters and the organ gun before the game was over. But I mean, just all my regiments and my cav were still sitting there ready for you, and they took out your horde, and that was pretty much game at that point.
Yep, it was bad. Your shooting was amazeballs, and that's got nothing to do with, it's not like you took a gun line. You took an organ gun and 10 rifles, and the organ gun just happened to light my world on fire on turn one.
Yeah, the organ gun, I think, is just so much better than the cannon. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I would just rather have 15 shots hitting 5 of them on average a turn compared to 1 shot hitting 2 times a game, you know? I mean, I understand that the 1 shot does more damage, but I'd rather get at least 1 to 2 hits in or wounds every turn, at least to, you know, try to keep making nerve tests here and there.
I think everything has its use. The organ gun's a 24-inch range, isn't it?
Oh, I don't even remember off the top of my head. I'd have to look it up.
I'm pretty sure it is. So, I mean, you take it, you know, if your opponent's playing a long-range game or a sit-in-the-corner game, organ gun's going to do nothing, where a cannon has the ability to reach out and touch them.
I agree that they don't have the range of the cannons, but, I mean, if you place it right, then it does matter, but right, not as much.
Agreed. But, yeah, I think there's a place for both, but I think I agree. Generally, the organ gun seems better on paper. Certainly seemed better in game on that one. So, I don't know, maybe my empire will end up turning into a League of Rordia so I can field my volley cannons.
Yeah, it is 24-inch range. I think I may have played it wrong. I'm pretty sure I played it at 36, but I don't think I overshot my range on anything. No,
because
so.
I was running orcs. I ran at you like
right
off the stick. I was like, I'm going to have to weather your shooting and stuff anyway. I might as well just go now.
Yeah. Cheat to win. That's the best way to do it.
There you go. So you ended up killing me. I don't know. I think like turn three or four, we called it. Like you said, the dude on the boar rider, pretty good. A hell of a lot better than any of the human characters. Like, he got over there, ended up killing the 10 rifles, turned to the side, killed the organ gun, came back around. I don't remember if I tried to run into anything else, but...
It was 20 rifles, and, I mean, I don't remember what you did. I mean, you did 4 or 5, I think, wounds, but then you rolled boxcars, and so just, you know, peace out at that point, which is part of the game, you know? It's got swings like that, and... So I was expecting, you know, to counter charge at that point, and
not so much.
It didn't work. But you know, at that point, I felt bad for you. You know, I had to give you a few points here or there.
Gave me the pity.
Yeah.
So after that, we upgraded to 1,500 points. You and me. You remember what we played?
This one was a get to your enemy's deployment zone. No. This was the one in the middle.
Capture the dominate. The
is that it?
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Because at the end, we were trying to figure out what was where.
Yeah, the first one was to get to your deployment side of the board, but this one was to get in the middle.
Yeah, so my list didn't change a lot. It had the horde of orcs, the unit of great axe, the unit of chariots. I turned the unit of the two troops of gore riders into a regiment. Took a second regiment of gore riders. I still think I only took the two characters, though. And then a regiment of trolls. Or no, it was a horde of trolls. You took a regiment of Brock Riders in this one, didn't you?
No, this one actually, the first one I had the regiment. I split this one up into two troops on this one.
That's right.
Added a warsmith and then a second organ gun and a horde of shield breakers. And that was, I mean, everything else pretty much remained the same. And I don't know, I thought it was a pretty decent army. And the game was good, too.
Yeah, the game came out really close. Ended up being a draw, actually. And I think it was a lot. Well, I mean, your shooting did more averagely that game. You didn't light any unit up in a single turn where you got so many hits and wounds. You were getting more on average of, like, you know, 7 or 8 hits and then 4 or 5 wounds. So that didn't make me feel as bad. Those Brock Riders hit like a ton of bricks.
Yeah, they're good. I mean,
I'm a fan.
Yeah, I'm a fan of them, too. Just the fact that they don't waver either, so you don't ever have to worry about that. And they just get a lot of attacks. I mean, granted, they only have Thunder's Charge 1. They don't have any, like, crushing strength, but that's enough to... I mean, with Movement 8, I can usually pick and choose what I'm hitting, so...
Yeah, I mean, if you can get a caster out there with Bane Chant or throw Brew of Strength on them, those things... Because, I mean, the Human Knights only have Thunder's Charge 2. And they tend to just plow through things. But you take a reg of those dudes, that many attacks on threes.
Yeah.
It's so good.
But this was pretty much your standard game of my... I kind of sat back and kind of let my shooting kind of whittle you down. So the first 2 or 3 turns of the game, I was looking really good. I was like, oh, man, I'm going to beat the holy hell out of Joe again. I'm going to feel bad. And then, you know... Your turn 3 and on, you start getting into combat, and it really started to swing at that point more to the orcs' favor, which is how it's supposed to go.
Yeah. I think I had a BSB in this one, too. But yeah, it ended up as a draw. Came out really well. At the end of the game, you know, the last turn, we're like, all right, how can I get this into the radius, and where's this at? And we were trying to, you know, really finagle those last few points into the center of the board for victory conditions. And I think you ended up on me like maybe 100 victory, 115 victory points, something like that. So you weren't up by a lot, and you weren't up enough to win. So,
yeah, I think I had to be up by 200 or something. It had to be 10%. Or it had to be 150, and I was only like 115 or something like that.
It was close, but...
Yeah, it was real close. And there was a couple of charges there at the end, or combats, I guess you should say, at the end that I've kind of flubbed. But, you know, draw is a draw. You know, it was a good game, so I'll take it.
Yep. And then I played Chuck for my third game with the Orcs. I upped to 2,000 points. He ran the League of Rordia. I added a Orc Warlord on a Wyvern. I mean, a Crudger on a Slasher. it's going to take a while to get used to that. And then trying to think what in the heck else I added.
You don't have your army lists?
No.
Unprepared.
Well, the thing is, the orc dude on a crutcher, he's almost 300 points. So I only added, I think, one other. I think mostly I changed equipment on stuff. Like, I put Brew of Sharpness on the Horde of Axes, so they had plus one to hit. Oh, I took a unit of Skulks, or a troop of Skulks, which is orc shooters. I think I had a regiment of Orklings as well running around. I'm pretty sure that was it. And then he ended up with... He took two big units of the Hordes of the Arles Knights or whatever, which is essentially Demigryphon Knights from Warhammer. He had two Steel Behemoths. I can't remember what the hell all these things are in the Uncharted Empires book. It was whatever the hell the War Altar is. He had a couple wizards, a couple engineers, two volley guns, or two howitzers, whatever the hell they're called in the League of Rordia. Honor Guard was the Demigryphs. Halfling volley gun, so it is still a volley gun. Look at that. He had a crossbow block, a rifle block. I think he had a unit of household knights. So that game, he kind of started pretty heavy in a corner. I, of course, walked straight up, positioned my crudger on a wyvern kind of next to a house but behind a bunch of stuff. So he didn't get covered because of the size difference, but it only gave Chuck one round of shooting at him with like a volley gun. And then he had the ensorcelled armor, so 6+ defense, so Chuck didn't do anything to him. And then on my turn two, it flew the 24 inches into the volley gun, killed it, overran back, got behind Chuck's line. Chuck came forward. My unit of chariots was on the far other side of the table versus a unit of the big knights, the honor guard. And it has a higher movement. So it got the charge off because Chuck walked forward, gave me the charge. And turns out if the chariots actually hit, they do pretty well. It's just when you let them get hit, they're super fragile, so they don't generally survive getting hit. So it hit the honor guard and then ground with them for like three turns because it kept wavering Chuck, so he couldn't charge me back. And I was like, ha ha ha. So that worked out well for me. The great axe ended up taking down a steam tank. Oh, I had a giant in this gun game. That's the other thing I ended up with, a giant. And he did pretty well. He went and fought a steel behemoth for, I think, three or four turns before he died, and then the boar riders got in there, killed the steel behemoth right after that. He brought a unit of honor guard all the way around behind my left side, which at that point there wasn't much there anyway. And then this is where, you know, dice or dice, they get frustrating. I had pounded a ton of damage into that unit, and I just kept rolling low numbers and not breaking. Like, if I had rolled average numbers, I'd have broke them two or three times. But I kept rolling, like, two, three, four. And I just kept missing it by a little bit. Like, I got a unit of guys into a flank. I had a unit of skulks into the rear. I had the crudger on the slasher in the front. And I was just, like, couldn't break the stupid thing. So that was also a capture the center objective at the end of the game. It also ended in a draw, so I was pretty happy. It wasn't a loss. That's what I'm going for at the moment, is just not to lose. And the skulks, the 10 like orc archers, they sat on the corner on a hill for most of the game, and they didn't do a lot, but Chuck did ignore them, and so they kept plinking a wound off here and there off of different things until, like I said, he got that honor guard unit over on my side, and he just completely ignored them, and so I threw those in the rear, and they might suck, but it's still 24 attacks in the rear. 5's to hit, and like 5's to wound, but hey, they did a couple extra wounds in there, and again, I still failed to break them, so that didn't help. But so I was pretty pleased with the whole orcs. Looking forward to getting more play out of them, that's for sure.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to take a little bit of more work than I, from when you first got them, it sounded like you were just looking for something that was kind of a no-brainer, push it forward, you know, do well type thing. But I think there's more to them than what you originally thought there was going to be.
Well, yeah, I mean, I didn't think it was going to be a just shove it forward, but it's a little more forgiving on the front that if you get into a bad combat, as long as you have the ability to counter charge, that 3+ to hit and that crushing strength 1 goes a long way to helping you out of your screw up.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which, you know, I think that's a lot of the mistakes I was making early on with the Empire or with the Kingdoms of Men, was I was getting into combats or giving charges up to get things moving, and the humans don't recover from that. Like, they don't have the crushing strength, and most of the units are hitting on 4+, 5+, so you're like, yeah, they're not, they're really not the guys you want to put into combat unless you're fairly certain you're going to win.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, so, have you just gotten 3 games in with the orcs, or have you gotten any others?
No, just the 3 games with the orcs.
So far, you happy with the investment?
Yeah, I'm pretty happy. I'm liking the way the models are coming out looking. I like the color scheme I ended up picking for them. Real earthy tones, except for the shields. I wanted to get their cloth is kind of like a dark blue gray color. And then, of course, you've got metal and green, which I think I spoke to this on Countercharge. I ended up spray priming the entire army brown instead of green, which was my original plan, because there's actually not a lot of skin on the orcs. Some of them have faces, and some of them have helmets that cover their faces. And then you've got like some biceps, some hands, and then pretty much just shins down. So there's really not a lot of green on there. But real earthy tones. And then I wanted something to pop, so the shields are a turquoise with, you know, white dags or check patterns on them. So pretty happy with the way that's coming out. One of the disappointments was the banners from the Mantic armies are really not banners. Like, the command sprues for the Mantics were all basically just poles with, like, a decoration on top. They didn't actually have banners.
Yeah, you were showing them to me. They're more just banner poles without the banner. I mean,
right.
Yeah, I agree. That was a bit disappointing. I haven't really looked through the dwarf ones yet. I probably should, but I'm imagining they're probably going to be the same.
I don't know, but luckily, I have a giant box. So it turns out a lot of the Skaven banners fit really well into the orc army if you just shave like the rat heads and the Skaven symbols off. It looks great. So they all got Skaven banners, and those will look just fine for them. I'm pretty happy with the way that the Gore Riders turned out. I'll throw a picture of them in the show notes. And yeah, I'm just really happy with the way they look. You know, once you paint them up, people say that max quality isn't that great. It's not GW quality. GW is like a golden standard. But I think that once you clean them up, paint them up, I think they look fine. I think they are painted just as comparable good looking as some of my Warhammer armies.
So. Yeah, no, I agree. I think they're good models. The one thing that did surprise me was the size of them. I mean, you're just so used to the Games Workshop ones being just these huge hulking beasts, and the Mantic ones really aren't that much bigger than your average human.
No,
really.
Not at all. I think GW is like 28 mil heroic. And then the orcs, at least, are absolutely 25 mil, like, realistic size. So, like, the Mantic orc is about the same exact stature as my Empire Spearman. Like, he's tiny. Which is why I'm not going to get nearly as much conversion out of them, because all my old orc bits aren't the right size. They're huge. Like, an orc arm from GW is like the size of this dude's whole torso.
Yeah, I mean, well, and that's part of why the Skaven bits you're talking about fit so well. It's because they are, I mean, they're comparable, really, to the Games Workshop Skaven, really. They still look good. I'm not saying that anything bad about them. I think the orcs are one of the Mantic's better ranges. It caught me by surprise with the size of them.
Yep. So you get any other games in? I know you played Dave, didn't you?
Yeah, I got one other game that day as well. Against Dave, he had his Abyssals, and so he had, it's kind of a shooting list for the Abyssals, but he had the 2 Ifrits, the big demon thing, I forget what it's called.
Abyssal Fiend, I think.
Yeah, and then had a unit, a horde of the lower Abyssals, regular unit of the Abyssal Guard. May have actually had 2 of those, 2 Abyssal Guard. And then had 2 units of, the Molochs, the large Molochs. Infantry.
Yeah.
Which he's actually using his old, I guess they're like slaughter brutes.
Yeah, his big beasties. Works out well.
It's the same base size, so I mean.
It's just confusing on the table. I know I walked down, I was like, Jesus, you have three of the fiends? And he's like, no, those are Molochs. And I'm like, that's confusing as hell, but okay, go for it.
Yeah, but in your basement, it doesn't really matter. And then he had a few other things that I'm forgetting, but this game went a win to him. It was a pretty close game. We played loot, which is the three tokens along the center line. Whoever controls the most at the end of the game wins. And so it's my plan was to take the middle one and then my right flank and just relinquish the left flank to him, which he took no problem. But I dropped the middle one. He just beat me in the middle. He had a lot of shooting. I mean, he had a lot of fireballs. Those are Fritz or Fireball 20. And then the
Cronius.
The Flame Bears or whatever.
Oh, yeah. He had three units of the shooters.
Three units of Flame Bears. And they're 18 or something like that, I want to say. They're 18-inch range.
Fireballs. I think
15 shots or something like that. So it's all pretty good. I mean, I was playing Ogres at that point, I guess I should say. I wasn't still with the Dwarfs. I had a Warlord on Chariot, a Warlock, Army Standard Bearer, and then a Boomer Horde, a Regiment of Chariots, Siegebreaker Horde, Warriors Horde, another Warriors Horde, two Giants, and then the Red Goblin Blaster. The more I play Giants, the more I like them. I mean, they're just fun.
It's satisfying that they can actually do something.
Yeah, I mean, they've gone for so long of just sitting on our shelves, not getting played, except for the random, let's be silly and take really bad lists, you know. And they're not great, but they are viable. They have their uses. So I'm really enjoying playing them. The thing that I'm disappointed in all around, and I'll talk about it more in our other game we did for the scenario, is Chariots just aren't very good. I mean, I really like Chariots. I mean, they're one of my favorite models to paint up and do it, but they're just not getting the job done. I mean, the Ogre ones are better because they are meant for combat, but the Elf ones I played, they're mostly shooting with, I mean, they can go in with some thunderous charge, but I gotta work with those more so they can try and make them better and get use out of them. But I digress, back to my original story here, becoming an old man going on a tirade.
I love tangent.
Yeah, but Dave won. He actually ended up getting two out of three, and he almost had the third one at the end. His big demon had it, but I was able to fireball him down. At the end, he dropped it. I wasn't able to pick it up. Normally, I do pretty good in this scenario because pretty much everything but individuals can pick up those tokens, and my characters or heroes are not individuals. So a lot of times, I'll have them just kind of follow up behind the army and pick them up and hold on to them. But that shooting was just brutal that he had, and I mean, by the time I got to him, I had a lot of wounds on me, and I still fared well. I think I probably ended up actually killing just as much, if not a little bit more, of his stuff. He was just better positioned to pick up the loot counters at the end.
Yeah, his whole damn army, that whole army having regeneration is just rough. I know he played Chuck, and Chuck was flipping out the whole time. He's like, I did 13 wounds to this stupid thing, and he, you know, two turns later, they've only got like two wounds on him.
Yeah, I think he said he regened on a 5+, like 9 out of 13 in one round or something. It was crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Yeah.
I mean, that's dice, but yeah. Getting an army where you have that much regen on your stuff makes it awfully hard to finish it off. You know, I mean, at least with the Kingdoms of Men, and then also with the orcs now, you know, I'm finding you take so much damage throughout the game that you look solid until like turn 5. And then you've got enough damage stacked up that even just getting one wound through and things start disappearing real fast.
Yeah, I mean, there are some big swings in this game that I've noticed, is because you don't take off models, so you look good, but everything's sitting on 8 or 9 damage.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, a dam ready to break.
But what do you do?
Yeah, I mean, that's part of the game. You gotta learn to play with it.
Countercharge. Countercharge is the first podcast totally dedicated to the game Kings of War. Join your hosts Andrew, Mark, and Rob as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War. You can find us on iTunes and at OhioHammer.com, a proud member of the Ohio Hammer Network of Podcasts.
So I had two other games. I played against Dave, and then I played kind of an alternate of that list against your elves. And Dave played the undead again. And this was with my Kingdoms of Men. This was before the army in a weekend. And I was finally tired of losing with the Kingdoms of Men. So I ended up building what I thought would be basically a tournament list. You know, I wanted to build something hard so that I could not get my butt handed to me again and again and again and again. So it had a horde of pikes, a horde of arquebusiers, which is handguns with plus one to hit, two regiments of knights, one with plus one move, dude on a griffin, wizard with an inspiring token, standard bear with a healing charm, two cannons, mortar, two steam tanks. One of them had a ballista on it, I think. The other one, I can't remember if it did or not. He took two units of Soul Reavers, which is the Vampire Cavalry, two big red hordes of whites, and three units of zombies, a couple of catapults. And then we discussed that after the game. We felt over-invested in Surge. Like, he had two Pharaohs and two Necromancers, so he could potentially, you know, he had like 24 or 28 Surge dice available to him. And what happened once or twice in that game is, he'd go, you know, he'd look at the board and he'd kind of stagger his guys out and he'd surge with the guy that was further away to move the unit up there so that it would be in range of the next guy, but he'd get lucky on his dice and the unit would surge out of range of the next guy. And so then he's got points sitting in a character who's there to move something that now isn't moving anything. So it just kind of, you know, he kind of wasted points on that. He ended up putting both of the Soul Reaver Cav on the far end of the board. And then they kind of sat staring at my pikemen for a while and another unit of knights. And so it was kind of Mexican standoff for like half the game. He finally set up so that I would have to come in, or that I could come in, but he'd get a flank. So I threw a hero and a Pegasus in there to block up that. Threw the knights. I mean, he killed everything on that side of the board eventually. But I did take one of the Soul Reaver Cav down. And then by the end of the game, you know, they were still over there and nothing else to do. He ran a unit of whites, surged it across the board into a knight regiment, didn't break them, and that was the key. Like, he hit them and didn't break them. And then on my turn, the standard bearer who was nearby healed them. The next turn, he charges me again, doesn't break them, at which point I had both of my, not steam tanks, sorry, beasts of war setting on one on each side of this thing, and so they both charge the flanks of this unit. It goes poof. The cannons and the handguns took off his other horde of whites, and so then it was kind of cleanup duty. Like, I finished killing stuff off and ended up getting, I think, everything but like three of his characters and the one unit of Soul Reavers. The Griffin eventually got over, killed the two war machines. And then I played a version of that list against you where I changed a few things. Was that for the scenario we played?
Yeah, so this game you're about to go into was for our scenario that we talked about at the end of the last podcast.
We'll hold off on that one then. We'll get to that after the breaks. Because there are a few things I want to discuss. I want to leave those topics for the back end of the show.
Yeah, I got some thoughts on that game too.
Yeah, that was bad. Hey, you know what? It was a reversal of that Wild West Exodus scenario we played. That's what it was. So, let's talk some news while we're here. And we got a couple pieces of news. First off, anybody who for God knows what reason doesn't know, Uncharted Empires was released. So that's pretty exciting. It's a 76-page full-color book. I've got the PDF of it already. I haven't gotten my hardback yet. So pretty excited.
Yeah, I'm ready for it as well. I got it the hardback on pre-order. So I'm just waiting for the call from my local game store to go get it.
Well, you know, I said 76 pages, but that's counting the front and back cover because it's a PDF. So it's actually 71 pages. But, I mean, the army lists start on page 8. So it's 7 pages of kind of introduction and fluff. And I think 2 of that's actually like a cover sheet and then a table of contents. And then there's like a couple pages of art. So it's actually like 3 pages of fluff, and then it's literally just army lists.
Yeah, it is just, you know, what it says on the tin. There's not a whole lot to it.
It is an army supplement book, period. No ifs, ands, or buts, which is totally fine to me.
Right. No, I mean, it does work kind of like the main rule book. Like, under each army entry, there is some fluff in there behind it as well. So there is more than, say, 6 pages of fluff, but...
Oh, well, yeah,
You're not getting a whole lot. This is really just a supplement giving you access to additional armies for models that you may already have.
Right. Now, I think we've discussed things before, but I don't know how much of it we discussed previously. So let's just go through the armies real quick. We have the Brotherhood, which for Warhammer equates to Bretonnia. Salamander, which is Lizardmen. The Herd, which is Beastmen. League of Rordia, which is Empire. This is where I'm like, you really didn't need another Empire army. You had the Kingdoms of Men.
But that one has halflings.
And it so does have halflings. We do need the halflings. Then why didn't they just make it a halfling army?
They should have. I'd have been happy with that.
You have the Empire of Dust, which is the Tomb Kings. Ratkins, which is the Skaven. The Varan Gor, which is Chaos Warriors. And then you have the 2 secret army lists, which aren't secrets. Well, at least one of them wasn't. The Trident Realms of Neretica, which is basically fishmen.
Fish people, please.
Fish people, fish men. I mean, Warhammer players have been trolling the idea of a fishman army in that game for ages. And so I think this was probably kind of a nick at GW.
Yeah, now, just a little shout out, you know, just, you know, here it is.
Right. And I don't think they're trying to be... They're not making it just to spite GW or something stupid. They had the Naiads, which are fish people anyway, in the Forces of Nature army. And those have been around since first edition. So they basically looked at it and went, hey, we've already got these molds. We've got these models. Why don't we just expand it into an army for something fun and extra and unique? Because Warhammer doesn't have a fishman army. No one does, to my knowledge. So it is unique to Kings of War.
Yeah, I'm curious to see... some of these armies. I want to see what people do for different models to, because like you said, there's really not a lot of fish people models out there. So it'll be interesting to see what people come up with.
Right. And then, I mean, they have some cool models. First off, they get Krakens, Octopus, Water Elementals. They just get a bunch of cool stuff. So I am very curious to see what kind of models people end up using. I like the heart piercers. These guys have harpoon guns, which is kind of neat. You know, yeah, it looks like a pretty solid army. And then the other one is the Night Stalkers. And this army's a little weird. So, I mean, if you guys have listened to, I think Kings of Cascadia discussed it. I know Countercharge discussed it. I think 4-Foot Snake had them on there talking about it. It is... essentially a unit of, or an army of guys who had their souls ripped away and separated from our plane of existence. And so now they're kind of coming back as ghostly things. So they're nightmares. They're basically your nightmares coming to attack you. And everything in the army is stealthy. So you're all -1 to shoot the stupid things, I think. And then the other big thing that they get is they steal your inspiring. So they don't have inspiring themselves. They're not even allowed to buy the item that gives them inspiring. But what they do have is they use your inspiring, but they actually have the 12-inch reach. So if they're within 12 inches of one of your dudes that inspires, they're inspired. And that's pretty awesome.
I'm a little worried about this army. It has a lot of potential in it to be very cool, but all the pictures in here are just basically things that are black, just really kind of shadow creatures. And so I can see a lot of people primering some stuff black and putting red eyes on it and calling it done.
Yeah. It depends on how well it's done. I mean, I think you will probably run into that where people are just like, no, it's my shadow army, dude. And you're like, come on, dude, throw a little more effort into it than that. And then again, it's very open as far as what are people going to use as models.
Yeah.
You know?
Hopefully, I mean, I haven't heard anything, but hopefully Mantic's going to be releasing some models.
One can hope.
Sometime soon. I mean, for all of their armies, really, but especially for these new ones, just to... Because, I mean, they are kind of so kind of out of left field that there's not a lot of ranges already out there for them. I mean, I guess you can maybe convert, like, some Tyranid-type stuff, and I'm sure Reaper's got some kind of models you could use, but...
I'm sure anybody that bought in on the Bones Kickstarter can probably slap one of these armies together pretty easy with the weird monsters and things that came in it.
Yeah, but I do like both of those armies as far as the options in them. I haven't, you know, gone through them with a fine-tooth comb or by any means, but just glancing through it, I think they are some pretty solid armies and just kind of neat ideas, something that really hasn't been done before.
Right.
And so kudos for that.
Again, something very unique to just Kings of War at this point.
Yeah.
One of the standout units, I think, is the Doppelgangers. It's just regular infantry. You can only buy them as a regiment. They're 150 points. And they're not outstanding. They have 10 attacks at a 5 plus to hit and a 4 plus defense. The thing with them is, if they want, when they attack a unit in combat, they can doppelgang that unit and use that unit's attack profile. So it gets that unit's attacks, it gets that unit's melee stat to hit, and it gets that unit's crushing strength value. So a unit of 20 infantry attacks a horde of ogres, and suddenly instead of 10 attacks at 5s to hit, they have the ogres 30 attacks at 3s to hit and crushing strength 1. So, I mean, if you see doppelgangers on the board, and my guess is you're going to see a lot of them, you need to shoot those things off or engage it with something that sucks.
Yeah, I didn't even think about them like hitting hordes.
Yeah.
And that is very good for 150 points.
No kidding. Like, when I heard that originally, I hadn't seen the book yet. And I was like, surely those things are going to be expensive. And when it came out, I was like, 150 points. But it is a regiment, and these dudes, even though they're kind of spectral ghosts or whatever, they do have nerve values that waver. So the doppelgangers are only a 14-17. They don't regen or anything, so they're not real hard to get rid of. If you get the charge off on them, if you've done any damage to them previous to the charge, you know, you should be able to take them off in a shot. I think it's just you can't throw something at them that's combat heavy and risk not breaking them.
Yeah.
Because they'll turn around and eat your face. Or at least do a boatload of damage in return that you probably don't want to deal with. I guess actually a unit that wouldn't be bad to hit them with is something with Thunderous Charge. Like, oh, I hit you with Thunderous Charge. Even on your turn, if you countercharge me, I've probably done a damage to you, which means you're hindered, which means... You know, well, even then, the doppelgangers don't take your thunderous charge stat, so they're going to be hitting you on threes, you know, normal heavy cavalry, but no crushing strength, no thunderous charge, which means they're going to do a significantly less amount of damage.
Yeah, I mean, there's always ways around everything that I've seen in this game so far. It's a really well-balanced game, you know, but it's just a neat aspect for that unit to... I mean, this is one of those units that you really kind of got to know what it does to be able to defeat it. You can't just be like, oh, I'll hit it and figure out what it does when I ask what its defense is, you know?
Right.
But hopefully someone out there with much more talent than I will do one of these armies, because there is so much room for just some great modeling in that particular army.
It definitely has the ability to make for some cool stuff. So the next thing we have up to talk about is Mantic actually released some new models, which, huzzah! So what we have is the Abyssal Dwarf Ironcaster on a half-breed, the Elf Dragon on, or Elf Kindred Lord on a dragon, an Orc Godspeaker, the Ogre Hunters, and the Zombie Trolls. So let's start at the big fluffy things. We've got the Abyssal Dwarf on a Lamassu, basically. He's on a half breed, but essentially this is in GW terms the dude on Lamassu. I like him, actually. One of the things to point out is he is actually a dual kit model. So it is the same dude for the Elf Dragon Lord as it is for the Abyssal. It's just a different head option.
Yeah, I like him too. I mean, to be honest, when I first glanced at him, my first initial impression was Fisher Price. I mean, it kind of looks like a toy that would come with a little kid's Fisher Price like castle set.
He does look a bit plasticky and a little. He's a chunky guy.
If you keep looking at it, like if you actually look at it and look at the detail, it's really a nice model. I mean, it's. I think the paint job is also kind of what threw me off. It's that just kind of red and kind of a tan, kind of whitish color, and that's your standard dragon colors.
Yeah.
But I mean, really look at it, and it is a really nice model.
I don't care much for the elf on the back, and I think that the half breed, the Abyssal Dwarf version, I think that its head looks better. But no, I agree. I think the model looks fine. It's chunkier than the dragons we're used to, because again, we're used to GW, and their guys have always been big and thin and wispy, and this dude's just he's fat bottomed. Frankly, he makes the rockin' world go round.
Yeah, but well, I mean, I guess you don't have to be, but they don't have those big bases that GW is doing there at the end, so you kind of want to fit it on. I mean, this one is a 75 mil base instead of a 50,
right?
But you still got to make them fit, and so overall, thumbs up for me on these two guys. I think they're real well. I think I agree with you. The Abyssal Dwarf Rider is better than the Elf, but I think I do like the Dragon better than the whatever half breed Lamassu thing.
Yeah, and they're only $50, so
yeah,
good price. I'm down on them. So then we get the Ogre Hunters. I love these mods. These are actually, I don't care much for Mantic's Ogre line. I don't like the fact that they all skipped leg day. But the Ogre Hunters, I really do like the look of these guys.
Yeah, these guys and their Shield Breakers, I think, are two of the best units that they have. I mean, the only problem is they're metal, and I hate metal. But for three guys, it's what, $35? That's for three metal guys. That's still a good price on them, and they're really good looking models. I got nothing bad to say about these guys other than they're metal.
Yeah, they are metal. Dave brought his over for me to look at one day, and I do like that. Unlike some of the, like most of their plastics have pegs in the arms, you know, and these dudes actually have flat spots where the arm goes onto the body, which means that it's easier to pin them. And because of it being just flat and not pegged, it's a lot easier to kind of reposition their arms into a place that you want them to be. So I like the fur coats, the furs around their legs. It just really bulks them out a bit more. And then, you know, they look more proportionate. They look more the way I would envision an ogre looking. And I like that kind of feral, bearded, big teeth look.
Yeah, you're talking about, Dave has the Berserker Braves. That's the one you're talking about. Oh, is
that
about. What
he has? I thought that was these dudes.
No, not the Hunt. No, the Berserker Braves came out. I misspoke. I said Shield Breakers, but it's actually the Berserker Braves were the ones that just recently came out before the Hunters. And they're also really good.
I mean, these dudes look a lot like him, so I like these dudes too.
Yeah, no, they got two very solid units that they just released. They're both well done. Like, I have Games Workshop Ogres, and I've thought about buying some of these Berserker Braves and maybe even some of the Hunters, just to, because I don't really have any of the GW Hunters, and they only have that one model. And these guys have a lot of armor and fur on them, so they do match the GW Ogres better than just the regular Warriors do.
Gotcha. Yeah, I am looking at the Braves now. Those are the ones I was thinking of. But the Hunters still look good. They look on par with those dudes, which
absolutely
means I like them a lot better. And like you said, $35 for three, certainly not unreasonable considering metal product. Then we get the Undead Zombie Trolls. They're zombie trolls. I mean, I don't know what else to say about them. I like the way they look. Again, the price is right. We're looking at
again, 35.
I assume these are going to be in metal, does it say? Yeah, metal miniature. I like the one that's got like his jaw kind of hanging down. I like the one that's got his guts hanging out. Yeah, I mean, I dig them.
Yeah, again, good models. I mean, it's. I think that's going to be a reoccurring theme through all these new releases here, that Mantic did a really good job on these new releases. I mean, I don't think that. I think the ogres look better than these, but I also don't have anything that has trolls, so I'm kind of partial to the ogres. But by no means are these bad models. These are a lot of people that I've talked to. These are their favorites of the new releases because they are just that good.
Yeah, I kind of like the undead zombie trolls more than the actual trolls, because again, the actual trolls are older. They skipped leg day. They have gargantuan torsos and arms and teensy weensy legs.
Whereas, you know what those trolls remind me of? The bad guys in the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Oh, the Koopas. Like
with the trench coats that start swaying in the elevators because they have those little teeny tiny heads.
Oh, dude. That was a like terrible movie.
The first time I saw those, I was like, oh, someone's got to model trench coats on those guys.
That's nice. Yeah, the undead trolls have more proportionate bodies. The legs are bigger. The arms and torsos got smaller so that they're more appropriately sized. Actually, I like their poses a little better, too, frankly.
Yeah, they're more dynamic.
So, yay for the undead trolls. And then we get an orc god speaker, which embitters me because one wasn't included with the mega army, and I actually like this model quite a bit. I ended up converting one of my warriors into a wizard, so I'm sure at some point I'll have a need for a second wizard, and I'll go ahead and buy this dude. He's metal, $9.99, so $10. He's cool looking. He's got his whole head out there, skull on a staff.
Looks like he's got a secondary head with a helmet on. I think that version looks better. So it looks like you got some options with this guy, or I guess you could pick either one, maybe.
Yeah. And one's got a hand holding a disembodied head, and then the other one's got his kind of hand up. So yeah, apparently it's got a couple pieces in there so you can change the way he looks. I dig him, though. Cool model, I think.
Yeah, good model.
Good prices, so.
Yeah, absolutely. That's building bigger armies, right?
Hot on you, Mantic. You're kicking butt. So that's, yeah, new models. Very exciting. And then the last piece of news. Registration for Adepticon is on.
Hotcha.
Yay! So the Adepticon went up on the 23rd for sale, I think it was. And
yeah, I think so.
I'm all registered. Are you all registered?
I am all registered. Yay. I am there for the, well, I paid for the weekend. I don't know if I'll be there for the weekend, but
all right.
I am doing the team tournament for Kings of War with our friend Dave. And then I'm doing that's on Thursday. And then I'm doing the 550 Wild West Exodus Gunslinger on Friday. And then just planning on kind of hanging out Saturday morning and then heading out at that point Saturday afternoon.
Chuck and I went whole hog. We are doing the team tournament together. And then I'm doing Wild West Exodus on Friday, same as you and Dave. And then me and Chuck are both going to do the Clash of Kings 2500 point on Saturday, Sunday, 6 rounds. So I'm gonna pack in a lot of damn gaming that weekend.
Yeah, Godspeed. That is a busy, busy weekend.
Whole hog, baby, all the way. Hoping to have my orcs done for it. But if not, it's going to be probably the human army, just because that's the one I'm comfortable with. I would rather take the orcs because I know they're Mantic models and, you know, just represent. You know, you're going to the company's big tournament as far as we're concerned right now. Definitely want to represent what that company is and what they produce. But barring that, probably humans.
I'm may try and get some 1,000 points of the dwarves done for the team tournament, but it also depends on what we want to do. And I still got to paint some stuff up for the Wild West Exodus posse as well. So I don't know if I'm going to have time, but the current goal is to get 1,000 points of dwarves done.
Yeah.
And see if I can, you know, send them on their maiden voyage to Adepticon.
I haven't even looked at Wild West Exodus yet. I don't know where I'm at on that. Wild West Exodus builds weird. It's 550, but it's 350 in a main list that you use every game. And then you build two 200-point sideboards that you can switch in and out from game to game. considering I'm trying to paint a freaking 2,500 point orc army, something tells me that I'm just going to build a 550 Wild West Exes list and play the same thing every game without even a sideboard.
Yeah, I think that's where I'm at as well. I mean, I've only played a handful of Wild West Exes games just with you guys, so I got no illusions of grandeur about going up there. I just want to get a tournament in with it, see how it goes.
Agreed.
And so if I got the same 550 for all three rounds, it's not a big deal. I just got to make sure it's a good 550, right?
Well, I mean, I think that's the idea, at least.
I do like the idea of the sideboards, though. That is pretty interesting. You don't see that a lot with miniature games. It's mostly in card games that you see that. So I do like that they did add that aspect to it. So I am going to try and do it, even if it's just a, you know, a couple extra models here that I don't really use, but I want to try and get them painted up to at least have the option to do it.
Right. So the Kings of War tournaments were both, I think the team tournament was capacity to 30, and then I think the Clash of Kings was capacity to either at 30 or 40. Currently looking at the list, it looks like there's two slots open in the team tournament and five in the Clash of Kings. So almost full. Pretty cool with that.
I'm pretty sure the 2 days started at 30 and they've already bumped it to 40.
Have they?
Yeah. I mean, I just, being the new guy, I can justify getting my teeth kicked in for 1 day. But I don't know if I want to pay to have my teeth kicked in for 2 days.
Oh, come on.
1 day's a learning experience. 2 days is just kind of sad. I don't know. So I'm currently not doing the 2 day one, but that could change. We'll see what happens.
You and Dave manhandled me for the first 15 of our games in freaking Kings of War.
Yeah, that's true. Just that last game you played with Dave was your first win that you talked about.
Yeah. So I don't think there's anything really important to note. The Clash of Kings is 2,500 points. It's going to play all six scenarios. Everything's legal. You know, all the Uncharted Empires lists, including the Twilight Kin, which isn't in the book. It's going to come out in a later book, but they got, like, I guess it's the version 6 PDF that they can use. Chess clocks are going to be in use, so we need to start practicing with that, especially for the team tournament.
I need to buy a chess clock. I don't even own a chess clock, so.
Well, I have a second one you guys can borrow.
Yeah, okay. Even better option.
I mean, unless you want to spend $35 on a clock.
Not particularly, but yeah. I mean, eventually I probably will, because I mean, I think that's kind of the way most tournaments are going to go. So hopefully down the line, our tournament scene picks up and we're able to go to more tournaments.
Right. So, like I said, that's 2,500 points. The team tournament is 2 1,000-point lists. You can take special characters, but you can't take multiple special characters. So, like, if you both play the same army, you can't take 2 Gokamox or whatever. And then I think it was somewhere there that you can't duplicate magic items on the same side.
Right. Each team can only have one version of the magic artifact. The other thing, I haven't looked at the... Well, for the team tournament, it can be any two armies. Alignment does not matter.
Yeah. Just
in your fluff, you got to justify it.
That felt wrong to me.
Yes, it does, but you got to understand that Kings of War is trying to get players in.
So yeah, I know.
If I only have a dwarf army and Dave only has an abyssal army, you know, we want to play in this thing. That's what we got. Now, we don't. I could always take ogres as neutral and whatever, but I get why they're doing it. I mean, they're just wanting to get players, and right now they are, so, you know.
I guess.
But the other thing that they're doing that you also don't like is painting is not a requirement. You're not required to use painted models, but it does affect your overall score. Again, I'm assuming that's just to get new players into the game and get the community up.
I think that's up for debate.
Really?
I looked kind of at their scoring regimen, and painting is worth, I mean, it's a small percentage, but it is worth 10 points of your total. Now, in a tournament where, especially the Clash Kings, you're playing 6 games with 20-0 possibility wins, you're talking 120 points just from gameplay. So 10 points, drop in the bucket. But the thing is, if people adhere to Adepticon's model policy, all your stuff has to be painted.
Like, even Hordes and War Machine have said, at Adepticon, your stuff needs to be painted, because that's Adepticon's policy. Is that enforced in any way, shape, or form? Mostly not. I mean, I've seen armies there that are half painted or in various stages of paint, but are definitely not adhering to the whole three-color minimum and flocked. So, will I be surprised if someone's here unpainted? No. Should they be? According to Adepticon, they ought to be.
But according to the team tournament rules, they don't have to be.
I don't know.
So, I mean, I'm just saying that they are allowed. I understand that it's an Adepticon rule, or I guess it's an unspoken rule, you know?
Right.
But they're not in the army rules or the tournament rules. They specifically state that it does not have to be painted, that you can bring unpainted. I'm not condoning it. You know, I'm bringing painted models.
Right.
You know, my partner will have painted models, because that's, you just, I don't know, it's just part of it.
You ought to.
Probably count a handful of times that I've ever played with unpainted models in a tournament, including local ones. You know, it's, if you have painted models, play with them. If you don't, then you have the opportunity to come play in this tournament in good form. I think down the road, maybe next year or even the year after, they will probably change that if the community grows. I guess if it stays a small community and they're still trying to get players, they'll probably be more lax on it. But the way things are looking currently is it is going to grow, and so my guess is over time they will eliminate that rule.
Probably. So anyway, Adepticon, yay!
Woohoo! Come find us, say hi.
Looking forward to it again. Like, recently my hobby's been kind of doldrum, because I'm like,
I said there's no tournaments.
The no tournaments thing is hard for us. Especially when we're on the Facebook groups for Chicago, and Chicago's like, all right, who's showing up on Monday night? All right, we had good turnout Monday. Hey, who's showing up on Friday night? Oh, hey, we're going to do a tournament next month. Oh, hey, we're going to do... It's just like, we live so close.
Yet so far
from a community that is actively playing. I'm like, damn it. You know what would be amazing? If we would hurry up and get that damn high-speed rail installed and we could get to Chicago in 45 minutes.
Yeah, there we go.
Because then I would be all for rolling up there like once a month for a tournament.
Yeah. I did see on one of the Facebook pages that there was a guy in St. Louis looking for other people. So hopefully, you know,
if they get
something going. It's on the Fanatics one. There was one guy that posted and saying of where they played, and then I don't know if it was the same guy or a different guy, just seeing who all was in that area. So I told him I was in Springfield, Illinois, the land of Lincoln, and we'll see if they get anything thrown together, because I'll easily drive an hour, I mean, I guess maybe hour and a half, depending on what side of St. Louis they're on, to the tournament.
Yeah, I must have missed that post. Damn. Well, hopefully they got something started down there. Yeah, St. Louis is only an hour away. It's a hell of a lot closer.
Yep.
That's that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll discuss that whole snow scenario that we did in the winter, and then kind of make plans maybe for the next one. Oh, you're going to take me home tonight. Oh, down beside that red firelight. Oh, you're going to let it all hang out. Fat bottom girls, you make the rocking world go round. I've been singing with my So we're back. Ah, now we get to discuss the amazing winter scenario. So, I went and pulled out some old scenarios we have from back in the Warhammer days, and there were some winter ones where it had kind of weather and random stuff, and we decided to try one of these, and of course some of it had to be changed because it wasn't designed for this system. We did it anyway. So the concept of this scenario was each player has their 12-inch deployment zone, and then the middle 24 inches of the table are a giant frozen river. And you're basically fighting across this frozen river. Now, there's random weather that happens every turn, and there's stuff that happens as you try and cross the river. You could fall in, you could get stuck, your troops could get scared so they'd not move, things like that. Now, there were a lot of things on this table that said, you know, every model in the unit takes an initiative test, or every unit in the model in the unit takes an armor save. And obviously those had to change. So we ended up turning those things into just like, you know, if you rolled this result, then you're going to take D6 hits at piercing 2. If you rolled this result, you're going to take D3 hits at piercing 2. Things like that. So we did have to modify some of the rules. But basically the mission... Do you remember what we were playing? Was it the...
I don't... I think it was the one to get into your...
Opponent's deployment zone, I think. Yeah. Like, because we did roll up a regular scenario in conjunction with it so that we kind of had a goal other than just kill each other. And then turn one weather reduced line of sight to 12 inches.
Now let's throw some clarification in here. The scenario, the people, the professionals that wrote this scenario in Games Workshop said... Do weather every player turn, not every full turn. Well, we looked at it and we're like, bah, that's too many dice rolls. Let's just do it every full turn. And then Joe rolls this. And so first turn, he just pushes everything forward because he knows that I'm only also going to have 12 inches of line of sight, so he doesn't have to worry about it. So then when it comes to turn two and he re-rolls weather, odds are he's going to get his full line of sight and it'll just be... Christmas morning for the human.
and it was.
And so this game lasted about 3 turns.
No, I think we played it to like turn 5, but
well, I think we played it to turn 5.
The game really lasted 3. On the left side, I pushed everything up, like I said, or like Ryan said, I just shoved everything straight across the board. On the right side, I didn't... Like, when I started moving, I was, like, measuring, like, all right, let's make sure I'm, you know, up to 17 inches away from you so that on my turn I'll be able to charge or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then on my right flank, I had a unit of knights that I wasn't paying attention at that point. Like, when I got from one side of the board to the other, because I just worked my way across, I threw the knights just basically their max distance, not even thinking about it. Next turn, weather changes. I get my charges. Or no, I'm sorry. It was turn one. I had moved the knights.
Yeah, my turn one, I did get to charge his knights because he moved those within 12 inches, but that was it.
Yeah.
So sloppy play on Joe's part gives me 250 points, and then I get nothing else.
You killed something else, didn't you?
I don't know.
I maybe, don't remember. Yeah.
It sounds better if I didn't.
No, you did. It sounds better if I didn't.
Lets me whine more and complain more if I didn't.
I ran across the table. You moved into position, charged my knights with your chariots and palace guard, and smoked those at some point.
Oh, yeah, just to clarify, I was using elves.
Yeah, this was your elf army. You didn't take a dragon, which I was expecting a dragon to have to contend with, and it wasn't there.
Just a quick rundown. I won't go into magic items or anything, but just had a horde of archers, a regiment of palace guard, horde of spears, 2 troops of the Silver Breeze Cav, a regiment of the Stormwind Cav, 3 chariots, which are not good, or a regiment of 3 chariots, and then two bolt throwers to a mage, a king, and a standard bearer. So pretty average list that just got rolled up on.
Yeah. So, you know, that first turn you got my knights out. Then I had a big horde of pikes and knights over on your left. No, they were there to try and block your knights. You ended up getting your knights kind of out of the way. So the pike block, I had moved the pike block too far forward, basically. So when you moved your knights, you were actually able to get out of my front 90. And then so I had to spend two turns turning towards you. You brought those dudes over, killed, I think, one of my steel behemoths. The other steel behemoth got around the side of them. There was a couple points where guys got stuck, like out on the ice. They wouldn't move when we went, or when I wanted them to move. The second unit, one of my knights got into your archer horde, which managed to survive for like a turn. Because, you know, it's a horde, which means it has a high break number, but it was also archers. Like, they weren't going to do anything. Right. I wasn't scared of it at all. You ended up hitting one of my tanks, or, sorry, my beasts of war. you hit one of them in the flank with, I think it was the palace guard. But you did a lot of damage, but you missed the waiver by, like, two.
Yeah, it just bounced off.
And my next turn, I tore out of there. Like, I didn't want to countercharge. I didn't want to try and be funky with it. I was like, all right, let's my 14 inches get the hell out of the way so that you don't die. Which got me into your deployment zone. The Griffin went and got the bolt throwers. The unit of pikes eventually, like, this was at turn five, basically, at the end of the game. My pikes and your spearmen were standing pretty much face to face. I was like, let's, you know, I think at that point you were like, I think you wanted to call it the bottom of turn four, which was fine. Like, the game was a foregone conclusion because there was almost nothing left on the board. And I was like, let's just throw the pikes and the spears at each other to see who wins. And I won that because I had Brew of Strength and you didn't have anything, I don't think, did you?
Nothing of note, no. Yeah.
I had Brew of Strength on the pikes. So I was like, yay, stabby stab.
Yeah, and just rubbing it in. Yeah, you know. There's one unit I still haven't killed. Come on, can we play one more turn?
I was tired of losing, damn it. So, final thoughts on that debacle. The ice thing was kind of neat. It didn't make a huge difference in the game. It was kind of interesting. Like, the tank got stuck out there at one point. My standard bearer, I remember, got stuck at one point behind one of my other units. And I was trying to get him out of the way because I thought, God forsakes, you're going to break this unit in front. And then he's going to just be chilling, you know. But he got stuck and I got lucky and you didn't break the unit that was in front of him at the time. And then I don't think you ever got anything stuck on the ice, did you?
No. No, I think I got one of my characters or heroes stuck one time because I wanted to charge something. I think that same beast of war or whatever that had a lot of damage on it that survived, I wanted to
go get
charge my hero into it, and he, of course, got stuck.
So, yeah, the ice didn't make a big deal. The weather, unfortunately, did. It really made the game because I was able to just on turn one be like, all right, I'm in your face. You can't do anything. My turn, I get my charges.
Yeah, I mean, looking back at it, we really needed to do it every player turn.
Right.
Roll for the weather because, I mean, he could have then pushed everything forward, but then on my turn, if it cleared up, then he was boned, you know. But him knowing that I was
screwed,
not going to be able to charge outside of 12, let him set up everything that he wanted to set up, and it was just a slaughter.
Yeah, it was bad. And the worst part of it is that chart with the weather effects, we looked at it after the game, and out of, 11 possible effects, that was the only one that was going to affect the game that bad.
Yeah, I don't think any of the other ones even, like, of the other turns that we rolled, I don't think it affected anything. I think it was just like, nice weather, kind of sunny.
Yeah.
Play as normal.
There was, like, clear weather. I think there was a round where, like, the moisture kept black powder weapons from firing.
Yeah.
You know, and for the most part, it was just things like that. Like, oh, you know, it's snowing. Your units can only move, you know, half. Or they can't march. Or there's hailstones. You know, units might take damage if you roll a one on each unit, you know. It was all just small, piddly stuff. And it was just that one result on the table that broke that entire concept.
And we did it first turn. I mean, it couldn't have been any better for our luck. You know, it's like, all right, this will be fun. Bam. You know, so far, every scenario we've played for this podcast, it has just been
gone tits up
on one or the other. You know, it's not been a good game either way.
Well, you know, maybe that speaks to us just being bad players.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not like I just consistently beat you down or vice versa. We both just beat each other down. So I guess maybe we are just terrible. We're both terrible together.
It's full force in both directions. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, we still had a good time, especially, you know, razzing the hell out of each other, razzing the hell out of me at that point. And you certainly made some excellent tactical moves to try and salvage what you could out of it. But just that initial onslaught put you on a back foot hard. Because at that point, I was so far across the board, all you could really do was try and reposition things to not get killed.
Right. I mean, and it's at some point I'd like to try this again to, you know, try and, you know, I mean, we're trying to kind of fix things on the fly, kind of like we were, you're going to run into problems. And this one was just a big problem. So now that we've played it, I think we could do it again and make it a much better game.
Just get rid of the freaking 12-inch line of sight thing, period.
Or just roll every player turn. Or yeah. Also make, you know, not necessarily line of sight, but make movement also down to 12. I mean, that could also...
Yeah, that could have done it too, yeah.
You know, help as well. I mean, that would still kind of bone me on the following turn, but I mean, as long as you're still outside of 12, but I think every player turn would probably fix most of the issues that we had, at least in this game.
Yeah. One of the things I always hated about scenarios in tournament play is in a lot of tournaments in the early days, speaking as far as like back into the early 2000s, TOs would build scenarios that punished the out of some armies for no good damn reason. Like they would be like, oh, it's raining and everybody's minus one movement. And it was just a blanket rule that against armies like dwarves who had a movement of four, suddenly being down to a movement of three is like, why? Why did you have to drop me down lower? Or it would be all shooting is at minus one to hit. And it's just like they would make these stupid blanket rules that if you had an army that unfortunately depended on something, it just completely hosed you, and for no good reason. And that's what happened here. This one piece of the scenario wasn't army specific hosing, but it was a rule that absolutely in this game gave an advantage to me, and for no good reason other than just a random roll.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really all it was. I mean, it was something that we had both agreed on to change it to every full turn, so it's not like you said, we're going to do it this way, and then it boned me. And you said, well, we should probably do it this way. And I said, yeah, that's probably right. And so, and it just happened to that one roll that we didn't need is what threw the whole thing off. And I mean, that's just pretty much how it goes.
We was wrong.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well. Next scenario. I mean, here's a problem. It is December 2nd as we're recording this. This show will come out December 15th. At some point between now and January 15th, we have to somehow play, deal with probably five different families' Christmases, the holidays. Huzzah!
Hooray.
So I would like to play, and I mean, I guarantee we're going to get a game in between now and January 15th. I don't have any question of that. We have our we schedule nights, you know, every second and fourth Wednesday of the month we have a night to get together as friends and play games or paint or hobby or do something, you know, and our wives are all in agreement with that, luckily, because I've met guys that aren't. So like we're gonna get a game in, but I think what we're gonna do is probably not try and plan a scenario. I think at this point, you know, here we are, episode 4, we should probably try and get a game of Wild West Exodus in. Do you agree?
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm ready to get one of those anyway. I haven't played one in a while.
Right. And then I think, you know, because the Gunslinger tournament packs are already out, because Wild West Exodus produces those well in advance every year, I think we could probably try out a 550 list and play a tournament scenario from the Gunslinger for Adepticon is kind of a practice, kind of a dry run, like, well, I don't know, let's see what this looks like.
Yeah, absolutely, I'm down for that. I mean, the more practice games I can get, more games in general I can get, the happier I am.
Right on. So yeah, I think that sounds like a plan. So next episode, look for some Wild West Exodus discussion. Also, I've been kind of working on a real simple map-based campaign for us, and we'll kind of discuss that next show, you know, maybe figure out some kind of idea there, because unfortunately there just aren't enough people in Springfield and Chatham in the surrounding area, unless you want to travel, you know, you're 45 to an hour away to try and get a couple more people, it's hard. And so I kind of bantered an idea around of doing an internet kind of based campaign where people are welcome to participate by just playing random games and then sending us the results saying, oh, the good guys won a game or the bad guys lost a game, and just real simple like peg movement on a map saying, you know, divide everything into like evil, good, and neutral space, and they all start with the same amount of like map space, and then every time I get a result, you know, change that map space a little, so I can put it on the website and you guys can see the map kind of ebb and flow as people give. I thought that might be kind of neat, just something to get listeners participating with the show, get us kind of participating in a campaign and excited about it. Not 100% on how that'll work, just spitballing ideas, and we'll talk about that more next episode.
Yeah, we need to do something. I mean, I don't know. It's with the, I don't know. We just need something more than just one-off games. But unfortunately, just the three of us, it's hard to do with a odd number. So let's figure something out and get something out there.
Right, absolutely. So that's it. Episode 4, all wrapped up nice and tight. And right before Christmas. So we wish everybody a very Merry Christmas. Or happy holidays, or Hanukkah, or Kwanzaa, or whatever wonderful holiday you celebrate with your family.
Whatever holiday it is, you have a good one.
Indeed. So we will be back on our release date, January 15th. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can email us, Joe or Ryan at thehobbyheroes.com. You can check us out on Twitter at HobbyHeroesCast. And follow us on Facebook. You can look us up at The Hobby Heroes. Thanks for listening, and we'll be with you in next month.
Have a good night, guys.